Hey, and welcome to the Neurodivergent Musician Podcast, where I explore the world of neurodiversity and musicianship. I'm your host, John Hart, along with Luna, my guitar, and today we'll be talking about touring. Each episode is broken up into a traffic light format, where I'll share insights in the red section, improvised babble in the amber, and a recommendation you might find handy in the green. So let's head on over to the red section for more insights. So as a neurodivergent musician myself, I understand the intricacies involved in not just the music, but also the logistics, finances, and networking that come with a life on the road. So in this episode, we're going to explore 10 essential points to help you make the most of your touring experience. So number one is pre-tour preparation. Before you hit the road, meticulously planning is key. This includes booking venues, arranging accommodations, and ensuring all necessary equipment is in order. For neurodivergent individuals, having a structured plan can provide a sense of security and reduce anxiety. Remember, paying attention to the admin details can make a world of difference. Point two is what I've mentioned in a lot of episodes, and that is sensory considerations. Sensory sensitivities are common among neurodivergent individuals, and this is particularly important when traveling. Whether it's finding the right accommodation with minimal sensory triggers or planning routes with controlled environments, considering sensory needs in logistics can significantly enhance your touring experience. Point three is routines on the road. Maintaining routines can be a lifeline for neurodivergent musicians. Even in the midst of a tour, try to stick to familiar routines as much as possible. This includes dedicated time for admin work like managing finances and networking with fellow musicians and industry professionals. Point four is communication strategies. Effective communication is key, especially when you're part of a touring team. Make sure everyone understands your neurodivergent needs, preferences, and any specific accommodations you may require. Open and honest communication can foster a supportive and inclusive touring environment, and it's crucial for successful networking. Point five is self-care and mental health. Touring can be physically and emotionally demanding. It's crucial to prioritize self-care and mental health. Incorporate mindfulness practices, exercise, and relaxation techniques into your daily routine. Seek out local resources and support networks in each tour location. Remember, taking care of your mental health is also an essential part of managing your business. Point six is advocating for yourself. As a neurodivergent musician, it's important to advocate for yourself. Don't hesitate to communicate your needs and boundaries and be proactive in seeking the support and accommodations you require. This includes financial considerations, budgeting for accommodations and meals, while networking and establishing your business presence. Point seven is utilizing technology. Embrace technology to make touring more manageable. Apps for time management, sensory support, and communication can be invaluable tools. Explore assistive technology options that can enhance your experience on the road, and also consider how technology can streamline your admin tasks and financial tracking. Point eight is embracing neurodivergent strengths. Neurodivergent individuals often possess unique strengths such as hyperfocus, creativity, and attention to detail. Leverage these strengths to enhance your performances and make the most of your tour experience. Additionally, recognize these strengths in your business endeavors. Use them to your advantage when networking and managing finances and more. Point nine is cultivating a supportive community. Surround yourself with a supportive community of fellow musicians, crew members, and fans. Connecting with like-minded individuals who understand and appreciate your neurodivergent perspective can be incredibly empowering. This community can also be a valuable resource for navigating the business side of your music career, providing advice on finances and networking opportunities. And point 10 is reflecting and learning. After each tour, take time to reflect on your experiences. Identify what worked well and what could be improved for future tours. This process of self-reflection and continuous learning is essential for growth and ensuring a positive touring experience, both in terms of your music and the business aspects of your career. So that wraps up the insights on touring for neurodivergent musicians, covering everything from the logistical challenges to the importance of self-care and business savvy. Remember, you're not alone in this journey, and there are resources and communities out there to support you. So that's it for the red section. We're now going to head on over to the amber section for some improvised babble. See you then. Okay, so we're now into the amber section, and I'm going to go through some improvised thoughts. And thinking about touring, I'm going to go back to the three UK tours I did with Daryl Kelly, Billy Wattman, and Minelli Jamel. And I co-headlined both of them and sort of organized a lot of it. And we didn't have any agencies. We didn't have anyone sort of really helping us out to sort of book all the venues, to organize all the logistics, et cetera, et cetera. So it was left to us. And I very much sort of took control in some areas as much as I could, you know, with the kind of limited experience I had. And it was incredibly stressful. But it was tons of fun. And I will never forget those experiences. But now knowing that I have, you know, ADHD and I have dyslexia, I'm like, why did you do that to yourself? But I think if I hadn't put myself through that, I wouldn't know what I'm capable of. And even though I was masking at the time, I was doing all these sort of things. And also, you know, there's things that I'm learning recently about sort of executive function fatigue and, you know, emotional dysregulation and RSD and then just impulsive action and all these other different symptoms that a neurodivergent brain has. And then you sort of apply it to the tour where you're in the car with someone for a long, long time and you feel... you're kind of stuck in this, you're masking, you're unmasking because you don't know that person very well. Now, when I went on tour with Daryl, we went onto his boat and he had a barge. And it's so how that story started was back in January. When was it? January 2016, 2017, maybe. And my good friend, Mr. Chris Woods, put on the London Guitar Night. And it's where a group of us guitarists would get together and, you know, we'd mingle, but we'd have like three of us go up on stage and, you know, we'd all connect together. But I remember Daryl mentioning, oh yeah, yeah, just, I've got this boat. And he's gonna be moving in soon and, you know, he's gonna be transitioning his life. Being the sort of go big or go home self, I then said to Daryl, I was like, oh, congratulations, but we should definitely do a tour on it. And he was like, what? Yeah, maybe. And then I started, you know, building this project and I realized, you know, my ADHD sort of took it and went away with it. And this is what I've been talking about previous episodes where you like, you think so big and like in the collaboration episode. That you can catch people off guard. You can rub people up the wrong way if you start to blow things up really quickly. But I just mentioned this to Daryl and he went along with it. And then before you know it, I was like, I booked the tour. We're going to be playing these gigs here. And then we can do an album. We can ride it on the boat. We can do this every morning. And he was like, all right, man. Yeah. Yeah. Cool. And it happened. But I remember trying to book all the stuff and trying to do it. We collaborated together on some of the bookings and some of the logistics and things. But, you know, what I have found, especially with like the likes of ADHD, is I have these pockets, like an hour or 2 hours, of like this immense pressure where I want to like take over the world and I want to do these massive things. And it's like hyper John, internal hyper John. And it's like, oh yeah, big, 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 big. But then I shoot myself in the foot because when I'm exhausted and I just kind of go, oh, John, why did you start these big things? You know, why'd you do these things? Because I've got to finish them off in my really exhausted, tired state. Or I've got to wait for like hyper John to kick back in again. So it's like a Jekyll and Hyde kind of thing. And I do this, I did this with tours. And I haven't done any tours lately because of the stress and the mental health and obviously everything I've gone through. I'm like, I don't want to do that again, but I'm glad I did the experience. So the tour with Daryl, we did it over a week or two. It wasn't as intense as some musicians' schedules and touring and things, but it was enough for me to feel, you know, very fatigued. And we, you know, in the mornings when we wake up for breakfast, we would like write a little bit. And then that night we would perform what we wrote in the morning at the venues and stuff. And it was magical. We had like, it was like a folky fingerstyle album based around a boat and things, you know. And that's my second album called Set Adrift. And then the next time, I think, yeah, it was Minelli Jamel. And Minelli is based in Canada. But I saw Minelli Jamel online and he's an incredible guitarist, incredible person. He's got an incredible background story and all sorts. And we've both got Cold Clark guitars. And I thought I saw that he was touring in Europe a period and he was going to have 2 weeks off. And I was like, nah, don't take 2 weeks off, man. Come over to the UK and we can do a host of gigs up and down the country. And I said to him, again, this is like hyper John, shoot myself in the foot. I'll book it all. I'll do it all. Da, 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 da. And this is kind of what I was saying with, you know, collaboration episode where you bring gold to the table to get someone like that over. Because if they've got to do all the work around everything else they're doing, it's not going to happen. And I really wanted to go on tour with Minelli because there were so many amazing things, not only to share the time with him, but to see him perform, to learn from him, to be friends, you know, and that's what you can get from being two successful solo musicians who collaborate on something like this. But again, I shot myself in the foot because I thought I'll do all the driving. And I clocked up, I think, I can't remember what it was, like 1500 miles in driving. But there was one period, I think we did a gig like Oxford Way in the UK. And I did the gig. And then afterwards, then I had to drop him to central London or around London, because that's where he was staying. And he wasn't able to get a train back or a taxi, etc., because that would have cost more. And then once I dropped him, I then had to drive home. And I had some hairy moments where I was so tired, because obviously a gig can wipe you out because you're driving there. I've also realized I had like social interaction fatigue, executive function fatigue, and I was probably not eating or drinking right. And then you have sort of like this compounding effect of tiredness and bad diet and too much social interaction, too much masking, too much this. Around the performance as well. So you've got to put on a really great performance, not only for the fans, but I knew that Minelli was watching and you're like, I've got to do my best. And that took a toll on my mental health, because there was periods where I parked the car and then the car park closed by the time we got there after the gig, or I get a parking ticket or I get something. And that's where the impulsive comments sort of fly out. And I remember Minelli teaching me about stoicism and lots of other different things. And lots of other people have said about it's just thought and all this sort of stuff. But in those moments, it's almost like I can't help, like when all the symptoms heighten and the anxiety and everything just flies up really, really quickly. And unless someone's got a superpower to like touch my shoulder and it all just settles, it's really hard. So I either got to, I don't know, take myself away I go to the bathroom, splashing water on my face. Apparently that's a really good thing for anxiety. You can do the breathing technique where you breathe in with your mouth and then you do a short snort sort of breath through your nose and then breathe out. That can help. But when it goes really fast, it's really hard to catch your breath. So I'm glad I've got my guitar there. And it's probably the same with Minnelli. Every time I carry my guitar around on tour, it feels like it's like I'm carrying around home with me. So the tours with Daryl and the tours with Minnelli were completely different. But when you talk about, you know, these points I was saying, the pre-preparation, oh my goodness, it was so much prep. Like contacting all these venues, getting all of Minnelli's stuff, trying to send over everything, trying to do visas, trying to do this and that, and trying to connect with all sorts of people, logistics, you know, it's not just logistics with Minnelli, it was the logistics of my family because I had to have the car for the week because we couldn't hire one. So I had to drive around, so my wife had to get another car, and it just started to eat into so much. And obviously the sensory considerations, I wasn't working out my sensory considerations there, and which is why I probably got so burnt out. Routines on the road, it's difficult. I think when you go on your own or you go regularly with a band or a team around you, you can get into a routine. But if you're teaming up with a new musician, it can be very difficult because you've both got certain ways of doing things. I remember going to one house and I'm kind of like an extroverted introvert, and I was there and it was extroverted for a long time and I didn't take myself away, and you could tell my battery had run out, and obviously after the gig and all sorts of other things, and then you start drinking and then it's, you get a second wind, but it has a effect the next day. It's like you have a hangover. And then you just keep continuously carrying this on. And if anyone's done touring before, you know what this feeling's like. You start drinking every night. You start eating crap every night. You start sleeping bad every night. And that can bleed into your performances. Especially as a solo fingerstyle guitarist and singer, you know, it's really intricate and technical stuff that you can just fuck up at any sort of situation. And then so obviously communication strategies. I mean, that was difficult with different musicians that I went on tour with. And self-care, mental health, you know, I've mentioned that. Advocating for yourself, trying to set clear boundaries. I would just take myself away and set boundaries that way rather than try and be in a room of people and then ask them to, you know, work around my boundaries. I'd just take myself away. It was the easiest way. Technology, yeah, obviously it's vital. You know, I had GPS, so I had Google Maps, and then I'd have other apps. I'd try and keep a spreadsheet for certain things. I'd try and do this and that, reminders list, etc. My neurodivergent strengths, the last time I toured, I wasn't aware that I had dyslexia, but I wasn't aware about the other things. So it's very new to me and something I'm going to have to work in future. Point nine is, you know, cultivating a supportive community. Everyone I've been on tour with has been supportive. But again, didn't know all these things. So when the next time I go on tour, I'll be able to put all those things in place. And then reflecting on learning. I think I've reflected and learned every single time I've toured. And the third UK tour I set up or co-set up was with Billy Wattman. He's an amazing fingerstyle guitarist, classical guitarist as well. And we co-booked the gigs, and we broke it up into two chunks. I think I did that with Daryl as well. So we did like a group of four or five gigs, and then we did another group four or five gigs and put it on a poster, et cetera, et cetera. And booking these things as well, you know, working with new musicians, it's such an amazing thing when you've got another musician who's proficient at what they do, not only as a musician, but in the business sense, they know what they're doing when they're booking it and things. Whether, you know, compared to when you're in a band, people don't really know their roles. And I've done some tours with bands. So I was in a band called Jane. spelled Z-H-A-I-N. And I was like in my early 20s. These guys were in their, well, two of the guys were like in their 50s, late 50s. And then the drummer was like, I think he was in his 30s, 40s. Anyway, they were based up in Hull. Well, the bass player was based up in Hull. The drummer was based in Grimsby. The guitarist was based in the New Forest. Now, if you don't know of these places, just go onto the UK map. You've got the New Forest, you've got Hull, you've got Grimsby. And then I was based in Surrey. You know, specifically, actually, I think I was in Sutton, so South London at this point. And in my early 20s, you know, I think I just came out of university. I then, I can't remember, it was around the time, maybe it was 2007. And I saw this advert for this band and they were going to be doing a UK tour and maybe like building up to a world tour or something like that. And it was put on a plate and I was like, you know, there's no money in it yet. So it would be free experience. I was like, I've just come out of uni. I need as much experience as possible. So we did our first gig in Streatham, which is in South London. But I remember some ridiculous stuff happened where I was the lead singer, the front man. So I didn't used to go out as a fingerstyle guitarist and I used to play stuff, but I went for a period where I was a guitarist on its own for bands. And then I went out as a front man, you know, and I used to leap around the stage like a lunatic. There's videos and all sorts of stuff. And I remember doing this gig in Streatham for the first time. And then we had to drive up to Hull that night. So it's like, I don't know, 3 hours, something like that. And they had this transit van where they had all the gear. And then they've only got 3 seats at the front. And because they're the older ones, they went, right, you're in the back. I went in the back of this transit van. It had no windows. It had no seats. And I was just basically bundled in with the gear. And it was just like, is this like an induction into the band or something, like some some way of me having to step over a hurdle, wherever it was. And it was ridiculous. I was in the dark for like 3 hours. They go over speed bumps. I was like, this is where I die tonight, sort of thing. And I had a few of those experiences actually. And as much as I laugh about it, it was not enjoyable. Now knowing also the things that I have with my brain, I was like, wow, like, I was put in a situation there which was horrendous in regards to anxiety and things flaring up and whatever happened, stuff as well. I like to look, like, it's funny, you know, no doubt about it, but there was sort of sense of like the fear of it as well. And I remember it was almost like I'd been, you know, thrown in the back of a van, sort of kidnapped and then taken up to Hull. And then we went to the bass player's house, and then the next morning for breakfast was like corned beef between two slices of bread. And I was like, what? Okay, fine. I was like, just dry, but it was food. I was grateful. Then we went to a local pub and then we started doing some of these other venues and stuff as well. And yeah, it was very strange. But I remember the one particular tour we did, it was over in America. And I think we had like 5 or 6 shows and we went to Los Angeles and they wanted me to like ramp up my look and look more rocky. So I was like, right, I'll get some like these black boots. I get some black jeans and black t-shirts and stuff. And then they said, they put me in a salon, which was like 3 hours where it was like, I had jet black hair with, and I was a jet black hair with sort of blonde tips. It could have been the other way around. Blonde hair with black tips. I don't know. Anyway, I looked ridiculous. And I think it was the other way around, actually. It was blonde with black tips. Anyway, so we went to America. We did a few gigs and things as well. And played at these places. I remember playing at a venue called the Good Hurt, and there all the ladies came around with drinks. They were like in these PVC sort of nurses uniforms, and you know, I was in a relationship, you know, my wife now, and it was so surreal. I was like, what is going on? And again, not knowing what was going on in my brain, I was just like, what? Okay, fine. And I had to share an aeroplane with these guys. I connected, out of all of them, I connected more with the drummer because we were closer in age, and he sort of took me under his wing. He was really, really supportive. And yeah, it was so surreal, like going there, drinking lots, smoking lots, just seeing the Hollywood sign, da 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 da. But I remember not taking care of myself whatsoever and feeling so uncomfortable. And it's probably because there was an age gap in there as well, of, you know, with band members. And you know, and I felt like this as a male as well. You know, I couldn't imagine if you were a young 20-year-old female fronting a band like that and going on tour. And it just felt very strange and very, I don't know, maybe I felt exposed, not physically. I felt mentally exposed because I had nowhere to run. I had nowhere I was in a completely different country. I didn't know what I was doing, didn't know where I was. I wasn't under the control of my tickets and things as well, or where the hotel was, or where we were driving, or what we were doing. And that's very difficult, to not know the routine and not to know what was going on. And I was so twisted inside that I just kind of like went along with it. But after I came back from that tour, I felt like I needed to hide away from everybody. I felt like I needed to go into a dark room for a long time. And then there was a point we had we started doing a few other gigs, and we had one gig where we did a recording, and my vocals wasn't great and it was horrendous. And they called me in, they were just like, you've got to do better, da 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 da, you're focusing too much on your solo stuff, we see it at the moment. And they gave me an ultimatum and said, look, you know, it's either us or your solo. And I was just like, screw you, I know I can't do this, I'm going to carry on doing my solo stuff. And I've been in a few other bands. So, you know, I was in a band called Opener. I was, you know, and we did an EP together. We were working on some more tracks. But the dynamic musically was incredible. But the dynamic sort of as the four of us sometimes, in regards to like action taking, really taking this seriously to the next level, I just felt wasn't there. The guitarists, again, they're all wonderful guys. They're all wonderful musicians. It just didn't work out for my brain in regards to where we could go to the next level. And we didn't tour, but we did a host of gigs. So sometimes they're called touring. Some people think it's back-to-back gigs. I sort of feel like if you string a lot of gigs together and you can put it together, that's like, you know, flexible touring, if you want to call it. And it was easier for our routines and what was going on. But the guitarist was also, he's in a massive band, progressive rock band called Haken. And, you know, and he'd been building that since he was 13, and they were really blowing up. So that was his priority. And then that was the last band I was in. And that's why I went solo, and I could deal with my own routine. I could deal with these things. But touring also does not pay very well unless you sell a lot of tickets, which is why I need the events, you know, the corporate weddings and everything as well. And I'm going to do another episode on that side. It's like the working musician sort of gigs, which is essential to keep everything afloat. But I'm sort of thinking, you know, that's what happened in the past with regards to touring. But in the future, I think, you know, I want to get a neurodivergent team around my business, and I also want to get a neurodivergent team around things like touring. I want to get it across all areas, because not only will we be able to communicate in the way we want to, it also gives opportunities to neurodivergents who are finding it hard in maybe neurotypical companies or neurotypical sort of heavy teams to be in a completely neurodivergent climate. And if you are someone who's neurodivergent, who has, you know, an amazing skill set in anything from social media to promo to, you know, bookings to administration to design to communicating with people, whatever it is, I'd love to hear from you. Or if you know of someone, I'd love to hear from you. Now, at the moment, I've got a new team member that I've been able to get through access Access to Work, which is a government scheme, and I've been able to get that. At the moment, it will be, because I need to build it up, it will be either voluntary or could be commission-based. And then eventually I'll be able to get to a point where I'll be able to, right, I can, everyone's funded now, you know what your roles are. And also I've been working on my own for 15 to 20 years, so to get a team around me is gonna, it's really hard. It's like teething problems. It's like also relinquishing control of the things that I've been doing, but that burned me out very, very quickly. And I have strengths in creative stuff, and I can book tours, I can do all these things, but I would love to have help. And no independent musician should have to do everything. Now, that doesn't also mean like, well, you're an independent musician. You know, that's part of the past. Of course it is. And I've been there. I've done that. I've done it in a way that, you know, and a lot of things compounded and I spiraled and I went into crisis and SSRIs accelerated all of that. Da, 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 da. Now I know I've got neurodivergent brain. I'm like, right, you're not doing it solo anymore. And if you're thinking about booking tours and you're thinking about doing these things, don't do it solo. Get some help. Again, one of my goals for 2023 was outsource my weaknesses and focus on my strengths. And my strength is I am a creative, and a lot of us musicians are. You know, the recent song that I brought out, which is Neurodivergent, so this is September 2023 at the moment, if you're listening back to this later. I wrote, recorded, edited, mixed, filmed, edited, published that whole process, because I, not only that, I enjoy it. I enjoy that whole process, but it means that I'm not waiting on people, because I have a frustration that I set my bar very high for myself. And when I'm in hyper-focus mode, I can get like 4 hours work done in 1 hour. And then if I'm having to rely on a normal 1 hour for someone else who doesn't know what they're doing or whatever it is, it's really, really hard. So that's why I've kept a lot of things in-house. But there are other things, you know, that I want to be able to relieve, so I can just go, oh, right, I can focus on this process. I can just focus on being creative, not logistical all the time. So that is it for my improvised section. And now I'm going to go into the green section. I've already gone through a few recommendations, but I might go for a few more. See you then. Okay, so we're now back into the green section. I'm going to go through some recommendations or maybe extra thoughts that you might want to think about if you're booking a tour. Now, the first thing is I would collaborate on a tour. Try and do, you know, like a gig exchange or something, and try and find someone who's in your field. If you can book a gig in your hometown, they can book a gig in theirs, and then you've got two gigs already booked up for your tour. And then you're like, right, okay, well, if I'm based in Surrey, you're based in, I don't know, Oxford in the UK, this is, you're like, okay, well, maybe let's book one down in Southampton, let's book one up, you know, in the Midlands, or, and then you can start to spread it out. Give yourself a time scale. I would also go back to all the venues that you've played at in the past. And I love to have venues that I call home. So there is a venue in Southampton in the UK called The Art House. I've played there a number of times. A lot of other friends of mine have played there, and everyone there is so welcoming. And it just feels like one of those venues where you're just like, oh, this is good for my brain. And I now know why, because we connect so much, and it's just, it feels very arty. It is called The Art House, but it feels like home there. I also played a venue up in the Midlands that also feels like home. I played in Brescia in Italy, and with Emmanuel, who's got the Red Theatre under his house. I remember flying over there. I remember doing, you know, it was just one gig and we recorded. That was my fourth album live in Italy. And that also feels like home. So if you can start to have, you know, venues, events, festivals, whatever it is, that start to feel like, you know, I can slip on my slippers here, or I can turn up and I just feel like, there's a comfort here. Add that to your tour schedule. Now, also, there'll probably be a debate on this, but I think if you are very well known, mainstream, you're at the top of the chain, back-to-back tour, back-to-back gigs and dates for tours is very common. But for my brain, I can't do that. I like to do what I call flexible touring, and I will spread a tour out over a year. So in 2024, I want to take out the neurodivergent musician. And that's not only just going to be the music I create, but in between the songs, I want to be a speaker, almost like a TED Talk sort of style, where I'm going to talk about specific things, specific experiences, symptoms. So I'm like, well, this song is about, you know, unmasking, this song is about RSD, whatever it is. And then not only am I going to be catering towards music fans, but there might be neurodivergence in certain areas around the country. Because the hardest thing is, if you want to go and book a venue that you've never played at before, a location, you haven't built up a fan base there unless you've done it online and you can prove with the stats and things. So you might need another route in. So you might need to go and play, you know, a fair there or a vent or a whatever it is. So for instance, I've played maybe weddings before and I've played them in a certain area. I'm like, guys, I'm coming over to perform here next year. And they're like, oh yeah, yeah, we'll get everyone together and come along. So you've already got a crowd from maybe a party or an event. And that's the beauty about playing events as well. You can have spin-off gigs from that. You can have spin-off opportunities from those sort of things. But weddings and corporate events are lucrative. Again, I'll go into another episode about it. So don't discard those. They can't go on your tour poster, but they can be something that can fund it or keep your finances going, because you might only get 50 quid a gig from your tour gigs, but the exposure, etc., that opens up. It's, you know, it's a tightrope between doing your original act and your covers act. And I've seen some musicians before who maybe like poo-poo doing weddings, parties and corporate, or poo-poo doing instrumental teaching, or poo-pooed whatever it is, because they're like, no, I want to be the artist. That's what I want to be. I'm like, cool, man, do that. But you're going to have to get a 9-to-5 job in something maybe completely disconnected. Whereas I feel, you know, if I'm going to go touring, if I'm going to do any of this artist stuff, you need to have bread and butter stuff. And that is really vital. And you've got to weave that into your tour schedule and maybe your life schedule if you've got kids or whatever it is as well. And also your personal needs as a neurodivergent. You know, if you take on too much and the plates will start spinning, they will crash down and smash, and then you can then maybe burn out, and then you're not any use to anybody. And I know this from experience. It's really, really really tough when I know Hyper John's kicked in. He's booked in like every bloody thing under the sun, and then Tired John's just like, oh, for goodness sake, I've got to now do all this. I've got to carry this in this sort of mode at the moment. And I'm hoping maybe when I get the meds or when I get other things, it's going to be able to help that. But building up a team around you, whether it's family first and then, or you then branch out to friends, whatever it is, it's very difficult with family and friends, because if it doesn't work out, you don't want to burn the bridges with family and friends. So I would ideally get someone who's disconnected. So if it doesn't work out, I try not to burn bridges as much as possible. I try to keep connected with people, but also disagreements and arguments can happen and they can strengthen a relationship as well. So anyway, that's very, very random. It's gone into lots of different pockets of other stuff. So thank you so much for listening to this episode today. I hope you've enjoyed this sort of series that I've done from recording, performing. I thought I did a lot about all the symptoms to do with neurodivergence. And I thought I'd go into this specific period to do with the music itself. I will be going back and I will be doing episodes on, like, you know, maybe part one and two of ADHD and then dyslexia and autism and things as well, going into sort of the overarching umbrella term of each one. And we'll be getting some guests down the line. It's just trying to schedule guests and trying to book them all in and things as well. Again, trying to do everything all on one plate. So if you want to contact me, go to johnhartmusic.com/contact. I have just brought out the new single, Neurodivergent. You can go onto YouTube, you can go onto website, check out the video there. It's very trippy, but I think it does represent my brain specifically, or maybe your brain if you're a neurodivergent, very, very well. You can also support the new album at johnhartmusic.com/neurodivergent. That's going to be coming out in 2024, along with lots of other videos. I'm trying to connect all these dots together to synergize everything. And that is a great tip to have. If you are feel like you have got lots of things on the go and it feels disconnected, try and synergize as much as possible. And that includes the touring. So thank you so much for listening. If you want to come join the community, head on over to Facebook and check out or type in Neurodivergent Musicians. And yeah, I'll see you in the next episode. Cheers. Take care. Bye-bye.